Your gift of sight can open a new world of visual pleasure. As you begin to look, to see, to learn about the visual arts. Minnesota is for the eyes, the intimate beauty of the St. Croix, the wide freedom of the great farmlands, formerly patterned to growth and harvest. The raw cuts of the Iron Range, the vast industrial heartland. The drama of the seasons mirrored in the clear northern lakes. Yes, Minnesota is for the eyes. And out of the visual beauty of the state, out of the many kinds of people who settle here, come the men and women of Minnesota who create with the tools of their crafts. With their disciplined hands, with their discerning minds, with their very hearts, the things of beauty which are for everyone. Alan Downs, Associate Professor of Art, University of Minnesota, tells us about painting.
We're going to look at a series of paintings made by Minnesota artists that vary quite a lot in style and subject. There's a tendency, I think, on the part of a lot of us to feel that paintings are all telling the same kind of thing, and this may be part of the difficulty in looking at them. Pictures are exciting in all kinds of ways, and much more variety can be found in them than might at first glance appear. In this picture, it looks obvious. Everything is clearly understood. You know what all the things are. But there's another quality, elusive kind of communication, I think, that occurs here that is not right out in the open. There's a quiet moment quality about this picture, a dream, a strangeness, and yet on the other hand it's as normal as can be. And this is the kind of clue of some of the wonder of existence, I think. This is a very different kind of thing. It's kind of heavy and black, and yet it's also joyous. The goodness of living, I think, is in it, and yet it's, there's not people marching around carrying flowers and dancing in the streets or anything of this sort, but these buildings are a little bit jolly, and they don't represent specifically anything, but they represent a kind of order that you can see may have come from the artist examining the scene, but it's through his eyes that we see it. And you get a kind of notion that you're sharing a sort of wonderful experience with this painter, I think. A person has to realize that a painting is a thing. It's a communication, true, but it is an object. It's a new experience. It's a combination of the stimulation that the artist had from whatever specific thing and what a mass of things that may have been important to him, plus his own ideas, his own heart, his own feeling. Here's another landscape. Everyone, I think, can easily see the church and the various buildings, and then at the bottom what might possibly be reflection in water, but it's not so important that we know whether it really is reflection in water or whether it isn't, but that kind of an effect is working. This glitter and sort of fragmented look that we do get from reflections is a real factor in this picture. Now here we have a real happy kind of picture. There's a kind of deliberately haphazard arrangement of walk and wall, grass and wind and these kind of funny buildings that almost have personalities one after another. This is a picture of a place through the artist's eye. The artist interprets it, of course, and alters it, selecting from nature that which you think is useful to you in the picture-making process and rejecting that that's not of interest, because obviously, as we walk around, the world is kind of mixed up. In order to make pictures of it, we have to bring some kind of order or some kind of clarity to what we choose to see. We could think of these buildings, if you'd like, as a row of clowns sort of leering at you over the back of a bunch of flowers or something of the sort. It's real happy. And I think unpretentious in the very best sense of the word. It's fun. And yet, it has a kind of poetic rightness through it. It's not just comic, it's not a joke, but you feel better from looking at such a thing. There's a sort of a jumbled, bumbly look about parts in it, but at the same time, there's a rightness from bit to bit through the picture. And this is certainly not representational in the sense that the other pictures were. A person might say about this picture, any of my child could do it. And in a certain sense, the child could. A child can be direct and open and straightforward and guileless and thoroughly clear in a wonderful, charming way. And certainly their art reveals this openness, this frankness. And this is a hard thing to achieve as an adult. Possibly you've been to a costume ball or a dance where the room was decorated busy and bright and exciting. And I think that's the character of this picture. It has a kind of overtone of mystery and strangeness about it, but so do such everyday experiences. It's not a literal representation of anything, and I think that a good painting never really does that, to simply deliberately recall in a mirror-like fashion some literal visual experience, some actual thing. Photographs sometimes do, but even photographs are selective. This we can connect, I think, very easily. Someone wipes their fingers across a frost-covered window, and street lights shine through, and you get these little glints, and your eyes focus beyond the window instead of inside in this little fleeting moment. Or a fish swims fast through an aquarium, and the bubbles pick up. Or you're in a plane just arriving in a city. There's all kinds of things that this connects to. It's one of these moments of beauty, I think, that we all cherish but often don't discuss. But the painter can bring this out in the open, I think. Here's a very different kind of picture. It lacks the color that we've seen in some of the others, but there's a wonderful lilt to the line and to the tones in it. This painter works from nature and uses natural subjects, stone and water and buildings and boats and so on, and all these things are rather fleetingly suggested, but here it's the energy of the doing that we get a glimpse of in this wash drawing. Here's another painting. The color is subdued and quiet. It's like looking into a mass of weeds in your back lot. But looking in at those weeds to discover the mystery of such a thing, of all of nature. And that's kind of the theme I see in this painting. There's a softness and there's a harshness at the same time, sort of beneath the softness. It's like a lot of things we experience in just looking around. True, maybe unimportant things, but they stir up our ideas about the world and where we live. This is a fragment in the woods, some rock and trees, but the speed and action of the brushwork is important in this picture, too. Very nearly as important, I think, as the drawing itself. You see, it's an ink line drawing with watercolor used over it. And watercolor is a medium that has to be used very quickly and put down directly, and if there's a mistake made, you just about have to make a new picture. It has to all happen just as simultaneously as possible. And that's part of its charm. Here's quite a contrast to the last one. This is very well organized, very carefully thought out. Hours of concern for just where to place this part and that. Even the color is extremely careful, and it's planned with real regard for just what's going to go here and there and it's built on very carefully managed design ideas. Now, this is a picture that's organized, like the last one, but different. It's shattered. It's like a multiple exposure on one piece of film. It's like all kinds of action all piled up in one. The splintering and fragmenting of things. You could relate this to all kinds of literal ideas, but certainly the active separation of parts of an object, of an idea, is part of the theme. It's kind of quiet in its final effect, even though it's made up out of all of these little broken bits. But it's an order made out of kind of disorder. In pictures, one kind of order, I think, just basically has appeal for one person and another kind for another. And it's very likely that there's all kinds of things in art that just are not your dish, and others that may very well be. My point here is to give you a chance to see a range and hope that you'll look at them twice, consider them a bit, so that you can begin to find your place, the things that are rich and exciting to you when you can really discover them. But not to say that the goal is to like all of it indiscriminately. Now, this, contrasted with the last painting, is emphasizing, as you can easily see, color. And color is almost the major idea here. Well, a person might say, how can color be a subject? Color is just an element of these things. It can't be the feature. Now, but I think it is in this case. These forms are arranged next to one another so that you could almost say the most is being squeezed from every color association that the artist chose to use. This is a kind of picture I think you could enjoy for a long period of time because you can begin to find all kinds of things for yourself in it. Here is a good one to follow this last one. Here's a case where the painter does use natural subjects to begin with, but has brought them to a kind of organization that features shape and color and area and location. This is a cityscape with signs, but it's also an abstraction. It's also a picture that sharpens up these form and color associations for us in a delightful way. There are certain kinds of things that we find in the world that are unexpected, and we can enjoy this. His theme is one of kind of shape, line, color, and surface, arranged in exciting fashion. We find all kinds of little situations that we can cherish that are, I think, related to this. Let's see if I can't think of an example. You buy a new piece of furniture that has a beautiful polish and put a hand-woven bit of cloth on the top of it. And these two things together stir up something in you. And in this picture, there's an element somewhat like that, I think. There's a quality of relating a soft edge with a harsh edge, an unexpected shape with a thoroughly expected one, that makes it highly decorative, we can say, an interesting thing to just look at and possibly not think about, but just look. And that's what it's for. This is a very carefully organized thing, in a sense. It's not that the painter worked out a lot of charts before he painted it, but in the painting, he was very much concerned with things like space back and forth in the picture. It might help to, again, remind you that the paintings are things. They are actual things that have been made and not exclusively reminders of other things. They are creations. And this is a kind of way of describing that, maybe, this business of picture space. This is a good example of this kind of organization, the kind of floating in and out of some of the little rectangles. They aren't localized exactly. They aren't just hung or tacked up on a series of panels that you look through. They seem to move. They change position as you examine it. Here is a different kind of thing. This is like a figure, the human figure, I think. It's not a portrait of anyone, but it's connected that way. The color, again, is very important. The brush marks are direct and right through. It has a speed about it. It's broken and fragmented and altered, and as I said, it's no one's portrait, but the kind of figure idea might be called the theme, the starting point. It's a performance in color and shape and movement in line. It's quite far removed from literal things, but again, we can find things for ourselves in it, I think. This is quite a switch from the last picture. It has the general appearance of accurate reproduction of the subject, but as you examine it, you'll see there are certain distortions which give the picture an added life. Now we have a little different sort of thing. This is a row of pictures out on the beach. They have the look of kind of jewels, possibly, in their scale. Picture making is an exciting business. It's very important to the person that makes it, and it's, of course, far more important if other people understand it and can come to share some of the excitement that the artist has in making the picture. But beyond that, it's a kind of a private, exciting thing that has to do with the artist and the thing he's made. It's not made in the way that certain things are done in Hollywood. It's not calculated on the basis of its popular appeal. How many people will vote for this? And no polls are taken before the picture is painted. The good painter is concerned with making the very finest thing he can to the highest standards that he can maintain. And if this comes to be understood by other people and shared, it's a wonderful experience all the way around. I've been talking about these pictures as a sort of an outsider with you, hoping that you can come to share some of the enjoyment I get from the pictures. Now I'd like to have you hear an artist speak a little bit about his own work and his ideas regarding art in general. Following him will be others. David Ratner will talk about his pictures now.
It is not the artist's purpose to produce scale reproductions of objects. His purpose is to relate his life experiences in a chosen vocabulary. As the poet uses words, the composer uses notes and sounds, the artist's vocabulary consists of color, form, line, texture, and these things which have visual meaning. Each person is unique. He is formed by what he is born with and shaped by his subsequent experiences. As he goes through life, he has these unique experiences, and they are as only he can have them. There are emotions which are not extreme, which cannot be classified verbally. We think of the extreme emotions of happiness and of sadness and these things. These we can verbalize on, but what about the subtle emotions that lie in this middle ground, those that we cannot describe, those that we just feel, the blues you get on a rainy day, and why are you blue? This you can't talk about, but in somehow with shape and form and color, you can relate these things. And this is how you give life to a painting, not through the objects, but through the experiences you're trying to put down.
This is Alan Downs again, and now we're going to look at some sculpture, another form of creative art. Creative art, that's a terrible word. What's the other kind of art? Non-creative art? The first is taken outdoors, a wonderful way to see sculpture, I think, in sunlight. You might say that a sculptor works not in paint, but in light and shadow. He actually creates shadows. Of course, he makes an object, and that's what we all think of. But in order to perceive it, in order to be aware of the nose, we have to use this shadow that the sun or the light creates in order to interpret its form. This is a kind of classic sort of piece. The face is, in a way, all expressions and no expression. The pose is held. It looks as if it could stay this way forever. It's planned with care, carved with a chisel. It's a wonderful experience to make things. And the making of a piece of sculpture gives you this real feeling that you've completely created something. Another easily recognized kind of sculpture, a portrait, but much more individual in its interpretation. You wouldn't call this quite the same sort of classic form that the other one revealed. The material was important in the other piece. It was deliberately heavy and thick because of the stone. And this is lighter in feeling. It's cast instead of carved. And that has affected the artist in the way he works. There's a kind of delicacy of, you might think of this person as a dancer. It has that kind of charm. We don't get a chance to look at the back of this piece, but I'm sure that with sculpture, you're always curious of the back of it, with a good piece of sculpture. It goes all the way around, and this is an important part of it. In this case, you don't expect to find any surprises on the back, but some reassurances. Here's a very different kind of thing. This is a made object. You might relate it to flowers, to plants, to a great many things, to a steel structure when a building's made. It's fanciful and kind of dreaming that I think gives rise to this sort of piece, and as a person comes to look at it, you can dream too. It rises, it sort of grows, and I think this is part of the idea here. This is a different kind of piece than we've seen so far. There's a kind of horror about it, kind of terror. This is meant. Sculpture or painting doesn't, of course, have to be the thing that will hang in the bedroom and pass by. Sometimes a work of art can have a compelling power that is not maybe the most cheerful. But the most important experiences that we have are not necessarily prettiness. And there's strength, but thwarted strength somehow in this piece. It can mean many things, and I think it was meant to. This kind of thing intrigues me, and the sheer unpleasantness of the idea has an intriguing quality about it. This doesn't mean that this implies the problems of poor people or war, but our feelings that are behind such troubles. Here's a very different kind of thing. Wood. And wood is important in this piece. The texture and the surface of the grain in the wood and the fact that the tree did grow is all still saved in this piece of sculpture. It's not that wood was the handy material. Wood was chosen deliberately and an important part of this piece of art. It's a thing to peek through and look around and run your hand through. Here's a very different kind of piece. It's an interesting technical thing I might describe a bit. Those are bits of stained glass, but they're not the kind of stained glass you're used to. They're thick and heavy and jewel-like, and they're set within this black material, metal and solder and so on. This is a piece to look through, too, and to touch, but it's not necessarily a friendly touch. If you will, you might think of this as a fantastic headdress or an incredible object that you'd come upon in a moment of reflection. It's a strange and wonderful kind of mysterious thing that you can find all kinds of parts, like a fossil fish you might find in breaking open the stone. This is like a plant seed pod. The differences in edge and texture of the little snarl of wire against the patterns that are made in the cut steel, in this case, are deliberately played off against one another. It's a decorative thing. It's not the piece that you'd put on the bedside table, but it might go beautifully in your yard, right along with the plants, as a kind of testament to one's love of nature, and I think this is an element in this piece. Its form, its pure inventiveness in one way, but it grows out of this artist's seeing natural things. As you see, this is a large piece made for use with architecture, and the solid character of the stone is preserved. It has a serene and quiet quality. This piece of sculpture is, first of all, a stone. It makes one think of the stone you might find on the beach in Treasure, and the bird suggestion in it adds to this kind of quality of possession. But how can you own a bird? This is a very interesting thing to look at, this piece of sculpture. It's reproduced this way. You get just a clue as to its surprising effect. On the location, you come from under the mass of the building, and suddenly there it is. You can sort of feel it's a discovery of your own. And now we'll turn to a sculptor and his work, Mr. Peter Lepore.
Sculpture, like the other fine arts, is an expression of the artist's emotions. Through the various sculptural media, like bronze, stone, ceramic, and wood, the sculptor expresses joy, sorrow, and humor. But regardless of the angular or round qualities, a sculpture must be rich in personal warmth and feeling, in simplicity, directness, and strength of form, all of which culminates in a well-balanced design. Don't expect to understand a good work of art right away. It's a complex experience. Our understanding of a work of art is spiritual as well as intellectual and is seldom complete. Each time we look at a piece of sculpture or a painting, we see something new. It's like reading a poem or listening to a symphony over and over again without tiring of it, because each time we increase our understanding of the work and our experience becomes a good deal richer.
Now we'll look at some prints. Prints mean all kinds of things. There are vast varieties and combinations. Nowadays, as a matter of fact, almost all the known methods are mixed up together sometimes. If you want to own a picture, very likely a print will be the first sort of original that you might have. Prints are normally signed by the artist, and a limited number is made, but since, let's say, 50 prints are made, the artist can easily charge much less and still be paid adequately for his time. So the beginning collector should look to prints, I think, as a starting point. And now we'll hear from a Minneapolis printmaker, Eugene Larkin.
The special character of the printmaker's tools and materials produces qualities which can't be found in either painting or drawing. Since the prints are made by the artist himself with hand tools, each one is different, depending on such things as the amount of pressure and the amount of ink. Because we can make a number of original prints based on one design, their price is moderate, and many people can own them. The importance of any work of art, however, doesn't rest in how it was done, but in what it has to say. If my work is worth anything, it's because it's involved with life and has to do with the importance of people and the love of living.
Now, Warren McKenzie, a ceramic artist, will tell you about pots.
We're making pottery by hand, not as a competition to the machine-made, mass-produced article, but as a complement to it. The wet clay takes the imprint of every idea, hesitation, the pleasure you feel while creating the piece, and this, after firing, is fixed for all time. I don't want to make this fancy. We just enjoy making pots. That's why we do it. Inherent in craft work, as differentiated from painting or sculpture, is the physical contact of the observer or user with the product. What good is pottery if it isn't handled, washed, drunk from, used? The pot that's in a museum is half dead, really. Pots shouldn't be in museums. You have to handle them. You've got to touch them. This, of course, is the thinking behind our making many copies of a single piece. Although they're made to the same design, the fact that they're made free from molds means that each one is an expression of the moment. However, since they're related, they can be made rapidly, without too many errors, and consequently they can be moderate in price so that they can be part of anybody's everyday living.
Weaving is the Next subject, and here is Virginia Nagel at her loom.
The weaver finds joy and inspiration in creating fabric from yarns. Though we work at looms not much different from those used in olden days, we can weave an unlimited variety of materials which are a far cry from the pioneers' homespun. The weavers today blend wool, silk, cotton, dacron or nylon into exciting patterns of texture and color. Whatever the finished material, the possibilities of design in each piece of material are limited only by the weaver's imagination and ability. Whether we work at our looms as a hobby or as a profession, our personal rewards are great. Besides this, we hope to contribute in a very practical way to our daily surroundings and the comfort of our families.
Now, Christian Schmidt is going to describe modern jewelry.
Jewelry is a very personal form of art. It is related to particular people. Unlike painting or sculpture, which is to be looked at, jewelry must be worn. Because of this, I enjoy making jewelry with a particular person in mind. When I make jewelry, I try not to be limited by traditional forms, but would rather express my own personal feelings about the world around me. In addition to the precious metals and gems, I use copper, aluminum, bronze, stainless steel, plastic, woods such as ebony, coca-cola, amaranth, walnut, petrified wood, horn, bone, shells, and local stones such as Lake Superior Thompsonite and Minnesota agate. I find nature a prime source of inspiration. The vitality of growing things presents a constant source of exciting forms and textures. On the other hand, man-made things stimulate my imagination too, and the products and tools of our technology supply many rich visual ideas.
Architecture is an art we possibly see more of than any other. Brooks Cavan is going to talk about this subject and show us some notable examples of modern architecture.
You've been watching the work of artists who create as individuals in their own fields. While architecture is an art form too, today it is the sum of many people, the mechanical, the electrical, the structural engineers, the tradesmen on the job, the thousands of manufactured components which go into today's buildings, the artists whose work will enrich the building and the setting of the building in its immediate landscape and in the community at large. Think of architecture as the background for living. It's more than mere structure, for architecture from the beginning of time has reflected the culture of its people. Today we have the materials, the technology, and the wealth to build literally anything man can imagine. But because we have so much and can do so much, we must be sure that what we choose to build has real meaning. Each building must answer the need for which it is intended. But this is not enough. It should also bring joy to those who use it and to those who see it. Here is a new office building on the shores of Lake Calhoun in Minneapolis. It's entirely at home in a residential area. The exterior is marble, glass, aluminum. The interior is a pleasant space for people to work, carry on the daily business. This is a trend in today's architecture, that the needs of the worker are as important as the job to be done. This building was fun to do. This company manufactures windows. Their advertising campaign has been geared to the view through the window. So this new building has a pictorial garden in the center, a joy to the workers and to the people that visit the factory. What does an architect think about in planning a school? He must think of the taxpayers. The school must be economical today. He must think of the people who keep it up. The materials have to be scrubbed, stand the kicks of kids. He must think of the teachers, the convenient teaching aids, so that they can do the job that they're really trained to do. And he must think of the children, the psychological aspect. If it is fun, half the job of teaching is accomplished. In Rochester, Minnesota, one of the nation's outstanding medical clinics is a tribute to the high standard of medical profession and medical practice today. This building does two things for the visitor, the patient. It serves as a laboratory of medical science, while at the same time, it welcomes and gives hope. When it comes to homes, many people think in terms of gadgets. But when you plan your home, plan a house that has the honesty, the integrity of the kind of life that you demand. A home should welcome young people where they can have fun, where serious study and conversation can be carried on. Don't think of a home as a car that you're going to trade in next year. Think of it as a place where your children will have rich experiences that will be with them through their lives. The church has become a vital part of the community today. Instead of towering over the town square, as in times past, it blends into the neighborhood. I think the church is the most difficult challenge for an architect. For with such common materials as bricks and boards and glass, he must create in the minds of the spectators a mood for worship. The church must have dignity and warmth and sincerity. I think this church has it.
You have been seeing some of the visual arts and architecture by Minnesota artists. The visual arts come to many places in Minnesota. In Duluth, the Tweed Gallery. In Rochester, the Art Center. In St. Paul, the Gallery, School of Arts, and Civic Arts Center. In Minneapolis, the Walker Art Center, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, the Kilbride Gallery, the University Gallery. And all over the state, in libraries, schools, colleges, in theaters, clubrooms, restaurants, at winter carnivals, the state fair and the county fairs, in churches and in temples, displayed proudly, too, by business and industry. Wherever there's space and a wall in Minnesota, there might be an art show. Yes, Minnesota is for the eyes. And your gift of sight can open a whole new world of visual excitement if you will look. The artists of Minnesota offer a new way to look at the things of beauty which are for everyone, which are for you.